So let's begin. In this parsha, we come to Israel, Kitavo al Aretz, and we're presented with the mitzvah of Bikurim, and then we're going to follow up in source number one, which really looks like an independent section. Hayom Hazeh, and there are various times in Sefer Devarim that we get to Hayom Hazeh, this day. Of course, the question each time is, which day are we talking about? And especially in this particular case, so what day are we at? What is special about what has happened or what is happening right here? Hayom hazeh Hashem Elokecha mitzavcha la'asot et hachukim ha'ele. On this day, God is commanding you to do these statutes, ve'et ha'mishpatim, and these laws, v'shamarta v'asit, and you should guard and you should do or fulfill otam. B'kol levavcha uv'chol nafshecha, with all of your hearts and all of your souls. And that particular turn of phrase, hearts and souls, all your hearts, all your souls, certainly for us reminds us of something, and we'll see that there are a number of the commentators who are going to be similarly reminded. Et Hashem he'emarta hayom. Now, that word, he'emarta, is probably a little bit more difficult to translate than we think, at least initially. Et Hashem he'amarta hayom liyot lecha leelokim v'lelechet bidrachav. God will be for you, Lord. You walk in His paths, to lishmor chukav, and to guard His statutes and mitzvotav, commandments and mishpatav, and laws, v'lishmoa bekolo, and to listen to His voice. V'Hashem, and that's the same word again, he'amircha hayom liyot lo la'am skula, to be a treasured nation, kasher di berlach, as God has spoken to you, v'lishmor kol mitzvotav, and to listen to and to guard all of His commandments, ulatetcha elyon al kol agayim, and to place you above all the nations, asher asa letihila ulashem ulatifaret, which is a very interesting turn of phrase for glory, for a name, for, how do you want to translate, tiferet, splendor, and to be a holy nation as God has spoken. So I'm going to pause here for a second, acknowledging that I have not translated, actually the opposite is true. I've translated, but I've not explained at all what these verses mean, and that's what we're going to try to figure out. That's the whole thing today. So we have four verses over here, and we want to try to figure out what those verses are saying, what they mean, what they're trying to communicate to us. So I don't know about any or all of you, if there's any kind of frame of reference or anything that this reminds you of, or anything over here that you hear being communicated. The last verse actually communicated something which I think was very, very easy to miss. Did anybody recognize that phrase, L'tila l'shem l'tifaret, where else it was used? What other references we had that with? Okay, good. So we can just move on then. The phrase was used regarding the clothing that would be used for the Kohanim. So the reference over here is one, in case we're missing it, is that we are going to be becoming a nation of priests. So when the Kohanim receive their clothing, it's the Shem Ula Tefaret, and over here we are becoming a nation of priests, and that seems to be the reference. Let's begin with Rashi in source number two. Hayom hazeh Hashem lekecha mitzavcha. So what's the day? That's the thing which troubles us. What day are we talking about? Rashi totally avoids the question and gives us instead a theological statement. B'kol yom yeh beinecha chadashim ki ilu bo bayom. So instead of telling which day it is, Rashi says, every day should seem to you as if that was the day that we stood at Har Sinai, which essentially is saying, oh, this day has nothing special about it whatsoever, but every day is special. Right? I love all of my children. Right? So as I said, Rashi seems to, as I said, he's aware of the problem. He sidesteps the problem. Then Rashi continues, "V'shamarta v'asitotam, batko mivarchato heveta bikurim hayom tiskel l'shana haba." By the way, telling you the exact opposite. You brought the bikurim today, so what's the context? What's today? Today is the day you brought bikurim. Ah, you brought bikurim today? That you should merit to do the same thing next year. By the way, it's a very nice bracha. You did the mitzvah this year, that we continue and do it next year. Every year you keep on getting the same bracha, you're going to live a long life, right? Keep on doing it next year. But what's interesting here about Rashi is that he just now said two opposite things in a sense. One thing that he says is that this reminds us of Sinai, and every day we should be like Sinai. On the other hand, what is it that he said? It's because of the Bikurim, which means going within the context of the Parsha. We just had the Parsha Bikurim initially. That's what the beginning of Kitavo is about, and therefore he makes reference to the Bikurim. So I said Rashi seems to be going in two separate directions. By the way, it doesn't really tell us what this day is. This is because this day is not the day we brought the Bikurim. This is the day that we are being commanded about the Bikurim. So Rashi seems to switch it towards that, oh, the day that you bring the Bikurim. Haveta Bikurim Hayom. The Ibn Ezra, Hayom Hazeh. So this is one of the Ibn Ezras that you could get excited about if you wish. Ela Divrei Moshe. Moshe is the one who says this part. By the way, this doesn't deal with authorship issues, even though you think it does, because yes, Moshe said this and then God says to write it. But Ela Divrei Moshe, Vishamarta Belivcha Vasita Otam Ba'aretz. And you're going to do this in the land. So those of you who, like right now, you know, won't like this, I'm going to warn you that there will be Parshat Kitavo, there will be a Zionist element to this. So, you know, sometimes God does let some Zionism slip in. So we absolutely apologize for this. But he says that what's special about this particular day, which Moshe is speaking about, is because something else, something is shifting. And what's shifting is that we are entering into land. The Ibn Ezra going to Pasuk Yotet, Ulotetcha Elyon, to put you on top, Zer Haschar HaAmira. That's the schar for this Amira, which we didn't, HaAmira, which we did not translate. Moving to the Ramban in source number 4, Hayom Hazeh, what is this day? Hine Hishlim Moshe. Again, it goes back, Moshe speaking. Hishlim Moshe Leva'er Et HaTorah U'Lechadesh Kol HaMitzvot Asher Tziva Uto Hashem Lechadesh Lahem. In a sense, what the Ramban is telling us, what is the book Deuteronomy, Mishneh Torah, the repetition of the law? He's saying that that has just now come to an end. Moshe just now has completed. I know the book isn't over yet, but he's completed the task of repeating the mitzvot. So that's it. Moshe's repeated lots of mitzvot. Last week, what did we have, like 57 mitzvot? Lots and lots of mitzvot have either been repeated or taught the first time. And now he's done with the mitzvot. Ulachain amar hayom hazeh Hashem Elokecha mitzavcha lasot et hachukim ha'ele v'tmishtim ki kfar hishlamti lecha hakol. That what is this day? This is the day that now we're moving on. Which means Moshe's job was to take them out of Egypt. Moshe's job was to teach them the Torah. He's done with this now. He's still going to warn them and you have to keep it, but it's repetition. Not repetition of law, repetition of saying you have to keep the law. And that's what he's saying is going on over here. The Sforno in source number 5 will tell us something which may be clear, but it's just going to present a new problem. Hayom hazeh sha'ata nichnas imo labrit. On this day, the Jews are entering into a covenant. What's the covenant here? Which covenant is this? God is going to make, it's a deal, a covenant. God is going to command and you're going to accept. B'chol levavcha shetakir b'li shum safek shiru'i lasot ratzoncha. B'chol nafshecha shlo yiniach ota koach mitaveh b'yot makir ma'alat mi shetziva tolat mitzvatav uvazeh. I am again deliberately not explaining this yet, but it will. What he's doing is he's telling us what is this covenant. And again, that I think really is this main focus. Source number 6, we'll just read that and then we'll start explaining. Source 6 is the Emek Davar, who quotes earlier sources, including Rashi. Every day you should look at it as if God gave the Torah. And he says, Yadua hadrash shivi Rashi b'chol yom. By the way, that is for some people an insult. When it says, it is known the drash that he gave. Rashi, of course, claiming that his whole job is to tell us pshat, to teach pshat. Yaduah hadrash evi Rashi b'chol yom yebinecha kechadashim, aval ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. Which means, but we still have an obligation of at least knowing and saying what the pshat is in the Torah. And therefore, I'm not saying this is a slap in the face. This is, he said, okay, that's a very nice idea, what Rashi said, but our job is still to understand what the Chumash said. And therefore, he says,
V'nyan parshazu hu hakdama ubi'er l'kritat brit sheba acharav habrachot v'alkalot shenikra brit sheba arvot mo'av.
So now, full stop, and I'm going to start explaining what is going on over here, if nothing has been clear so far. We know that there was a covenant that took place at Har Sinai. What was the covenant? Chapter 19 and chapter 20 in Shemot. There's some information in chapter 24 as well, but let's just stay in 19:20. 19 is the whole preparation. I'll make you into a nation of priests. I'm going to give you this law. Chapter 20 is the Ten Commandments, Anochi, and so on and so on. So a covenant takes place. By the way, did the people respond to the Ten Commandments? So there is a Midrash Halacha, the Mechilta, that says they responded. There's a machloket between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael, what the response was. It's based upon the verse. Vaydaber Elokim, it's kol hadvim ha'ele, lemor. So it says, what's the lemor? Who's the lemor? Who was saying? So Rashi there tells us, back in Shemot, that the people responded, alahin hein v'alav lav, that's the real machloket. Did they say, by all the commandments, yes, we will listen to God, or on the positive commandments, yes, we'll do this, on the negative commandments, no, we won't do that. So I said, it's an argument between Rebbe Akiva and Rebbe Yishmael, and that argument does not concern us at this particular moment. But what I do want to take from that argument is that the people responded. Sometimes we can speak about the response in terms of a deal that took place, which means when you have a deal between two people, how do you create a deal today? So you can say that you need a contract, okay? How do you create a deal? Sometimes you need to shake hands. How do you create shalom ubracha? You create a deal. How do you create a deal? How do you create a deal with, we'll have, I'll even call it a contractual obligations. So part of what that midrash was trying to tell us there was that the people said yes. God said, Anochi Hashem Elokech, and they said yes. What does that mean? We accept it. Lo tirtzach. Either they said, no, we won't murder, or yes, we will not murder. Rabbi Soloveitchik gave a whole shiur on that point, what the difference is between yes or no. But they responded. It's the response which concerns me much more. Now we're about to have a new, now we have to be very careful so that certain people don't get excited. I say a new covenant, a brit chadasha, if you call it like that, then certain people understand it a certain way. Why do we need a new deal at this point? Why is there a necessity to create a new type of covenant at this point? And there's various reasons you can give. You want a negative one? We broke the old one. It didn't work out that well, right? When you sort of sign off a contract of exclusivity, and if you're not sure about that, Anochi Hashem Lokecha, yes, we accept that. That's exclusivity. Second one, do not worship anything else. That's exclusivity. So when you sign a contract with exclusivity, and then you break it, so that could be the end of the contract. So one way of looking at this is saying, yeah, now we need to make a new contract. The other way of perhaps looking at it is that was a previous generation. Now a new generation are about to go in. By the way, the negative part of that would be, so does that therefore mean that every single new generation, in order for the laws to be binding on them, has to have their own contract? By the way, now you go back to Rashi, every day we should hear as if it was being said at Sinai, right now, which mean, and that's part of the same teaching, which I think we talked about a year or two ago, that we all need to see ourselves as if we are at Sinai. All the souls were at Sinai. Sinai itself was binding on all generations. And by the way, if Sinai was binding on all generations, that means that Sinai was not necessarily broken, because if Sinai was broken, what difference does it make that we all stood by Sinai? So again, hold on to that for a second, and then, now I want to read the second verse again, and then we'll pay attention to Rashi. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Et Hashem He'emarta Hayom. What does the word He'emarta mean? Before you jump out and say, oh, I know what it means, look at Rashi. Rashi is in source 7. He'emarta, and he notices the same thing in the next Pasuk Yud Chet, which is Et Hashem He'emarta Hayom, V'Hashem he'emircha hayom. So whatever that word means, it's being used in our relationship to God and in God's relation to us. And Rashi says, ein lehem eid mochiach b'mikra. There is no clear reference to be able to draw a conclusion as to know what this word actually means. Which means what Rashi is saying over here, normally what do I do when I want to know what a word means? I'll take a look at the word, I'll see all the different contexts that it's used, based upon the operational definition, then I'll create a theory as to what this word means. By the way, I may have completely have done this incorrectly, but I have a dictionary at home, a very good dictionary, very fat dictionary, that's what makes it good. A dictionary of biblical Hebrew. Not of modern Hebrew, of biblical Hebrew, and it only deals with how words are used in Hebrew, and I could not find this word. Again, I may have just looked in the wrong place, but I spent a couple minutes. If anybody wants to come over and look instead of me, but I did not find this phrase. But just continue with Rashi. Rashi then continues and says, V'li nira shehu lashon hafresha v'havdala hivdalta lacha me'elohein hanechar liot lacha l'elohim. V'hu hifrishicha alav me'ami ha'aretz liot lo amskula. Now Rashi just now said something beautiful. It means that both of us, both sides of the contract, both of us just now gave exclusivity. That we chose God from all of the gods. By the way, be very careful about that. We chose God and therefore are rejecting all the false gods. We have accepted this God to us as the only true God. And therefore, that's what it would mean over here in the verse. Et Hashem he'emarta hayom, even though we don't necessarily know exactly what the word means yet. But on the other hand, what's the response of us choosing God? The Hashem he'emircha hayom, and God chose you. So, in a sense, what Rashi is saying over here is that we have some kind of a marriage. He also continues, and just to continue with this, he separated you, liyot lo la'am skula, to become a treasured nation. Umatzati lahem eid, v'hu lashon tiferet, kamo yit amru, so I do not understand the beginning of the Rashi to the end of the Rashi, because the beginning he says, I can't find any other usage. And over here at the end he says, I have found a usage, yit amru kopa le avin. So I'm just not sure what he is trying to say. I'll give you, I first want to look at three more interpretations, and then you'll tell me what it is. But from the sound of your confidence, you're correct. Of the confidence? Go ahead, say it. Two things. Good. So a ruler. So, right. So let's take a look at the commentaries. Source number 8. Look at source number 8. Et Hashem he'emarta hayom, the Rashbam. Ata hizkakta Shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'nitratzeh liyot lecha l'elokim k'dva toloi bo l'asot hu elokecha v'yoshiacha mitoch shekibalti mitzvotav v'gam hu he'emircha hefilcha shamarta v'nitratzeit sheitelo la'am. You know, this sounds very much like a marriage ceremony. That's what he's saying. You accepted, both sides accepted. You accepted, they accepted over here. So okay, connected. But by the way, if that wasn't good enough for you, then look at the last three words, which I made small, because the whole four pages would not have fit in if I didn't make those words small. Marta, interpretation. Ibn Ezra in source number 9. Hemarta milashon gdula, greatness. And it seems to me that it comes from Birosh Amir, the verse that he's quoting over here in Yeshayahu, if you want the whole verse. Only gleanings shall be left of him, and one beats an olive tree, two berries, or three on the topmost branch. So putting you all the way on top is the way that the Ibn Ezra understands it. Vayomer Rabbi Yehuda Halevi Hasfaradi, who's that? The Kuzari. Ki hamila migzeirat vayamar hatam ki asita hayashar. עד שיאמר שהוא יהיה לו ככה. גם הוא עושה לך עד שאמרת שיהיה לו לעם סגולה, ויפה פירש. והנה תהיה מילת אמרת פעל יוצא לשניים פועלים.
So he's saying that the word can have more than meaning. It sounds like what he's saying is that it means a declaration. That's what it sounds. That what he's saying, the Bechor Shor in source number 10 uses it from the word tmura, lahamir, with a hey, or tmura is to make an exchange, to trade something in. Et Hashem Marta, it be the mafarshi lashon tmura v'chalifin klomer hichlafte v'hamarta kol elokutcha ba'olam bo. That you rejected all other gods with a small g, and this is the God that you accepted, and therefore God, in a sense, rejected all of the nations and accepted us. Finally, the Ramban. V'tamat Hashem he'amarta yom, kevan shekibaltum aleichem kol Torah b'perusha uv'dikdukteha uv'chidusheha, hine gidaltum Hashem v'omamtem oto shehu levado lachem lelokim lo todu be'el acher klal. So he just now, he made this a little bit broader than we appreciated before. And he did something very, very simple. He's connecting it to the previous verse. You accept the mitzvot, and that's how you accept God. What does it mean when we accept God? So we accept to do the mitzvot. So by accepting the mitzvot, what does the word mitzvah mean? A commandment. So if you accept the commandment, what does that mean? That you accept that God is commanding. So if God is commanding, that means that you accept God as the one who has this right to command. So therefore, he's saying is that we've accepted the mitzvot, and therefore we have done something which is really quite significant. I'm going to skip the rest of the Ramban right now. As far as this suggestion that it means Emir, I'm just seeing if I still kept this on the page someplace. The Shadal says that. He says that the Arabic word Emir is the same thing as this word over here, but he was not the only one to say this. I'm just looking quickly if I skipped over this someplace, but I don't see that it made the final cut, as it were. But I don't believe he was the first one to make that suggestion. So let's go with that, because I think that has a lot of meaning to it. Right. But for our usages or purposes, it's very, very simple. Again, let's focus and see what happened here. We place God on top, the word on top, we exchange everything else for God, we accept God, we accept the mitzvot, and we made God as our ruler. But it's very interesting what God's response is to us, that's perhaps more important. What did God then say to us? That you were also going to be a nation of priests, which means at that moment we've also have become elevated. That's the point which is significant. You know, when we noticed right beforehand, on this day, what is this day? A covenant is taking place. So part of the covenant was looking at the significance of each side, that we accept God's significance. I know that may sound like a very funny word. We accept God's significance, and God accepts our significance, and then this image of on top, just for a sense of completion before we get to one more reference on this. Look at Pasuk Yud Tet again. Ulititcha Elyon, to put you on top. So this idea of raising up on top, the idea of an emir, maybe it's not as reference, maybe the symbol doesn't work as much for us today, but in olden days, the symbol, I want you to think symbolically, which is very hard for us sometimes. The symbol of being an emir would have been a crown. Would have been somebody who was the ruler, and the crown, and the ruler. And if I'm not mistaken, Chazal notice this particular symbolism. Give me a second, and I'll show you what I think Chazal are doing. But first, one more thing, and from this you'll also will learn something in terms of methodology. Source 12 is the Targum Yonatan, or the Pseudo Yonatan.
Now, he's explaining Pasuk Yud Zayin. Pasuk Yud Zayin once again said, Et Hashem Hermarta Hayom. What does that mean? That we elevated God on this day? We chose God as King today? And God lifted us today, and therefore he made us an Am Skula. That's the two sides of the same coin. Now look at the Targum again. Yat Hashem chatvun chativa chada ba'alma, yom nadahachin k'tiv shma Yisrael, Hashem alokana, Hashem achad. Now, before we get too confused with the Aramaic, when we go to the Hebrew translation, Et Hashem ehavtem ahava achat ba'olam. It's interesting, he turned it to love. He turned it to an act of love. You love God. Shekach katuv Shema Yisrael Hashem alkeinu Hashem achad. And therefore it says, Shema Yisrael Hashem alkeinu. By the way, where did he get the Shema in all of this? In that pasuk, where did he get the Shema in all this? Which was actually the previous pasuk. Which was, in this pasuk, and the answer is, of course, he's looking at the more general context over here. But the reason we chose God, that's why I'm going back to this issue of covenant, I'm going back to marriage. The reason that it talks about love is talking our choice of God is a choice of love. And that's what's interesting. The other thing, by the way, which is most interesting over here, is the reciprocity. Do we notice this or no? Where's the reciprocity? The same word was used. We chose God, and if the word is from Emir, that we crowned God, and we made God king of the universe, God then at the same time turns us and makes us king of the universe and his chosen people and a treasured nation and so on and so forth. Now that's interesting because we just now changed this. I know that sometimes people, especially feminists, will not, now I get everybody's attention with that word, would not be happy with a Jewish marriage. It's not right that a man should marry a woman. He should take the ring and he should give it to her. I've performed more than one wedding than when I meet with the bride and groom for the first time. So he's buying me like cattle? And I said, no. He's actually taking a great deal of responsibilities in this. But you know what's interesting about what we just now read? And please excuse me for using this terminology. We just had a double ring ceremony described. Why? Because we are elevating God and God is elevating us. And that's what's in it. It's the reciprocity, which really makes this interesting. Keeping that in mind,
we are elevating ourselves by elevating.
It's a beautiful thought, but part of what I still want to get back to, but why now? So why hasn't this happened before? Why wasn't this by Sinai? But correct. There is something over here which perhaps is circular, but again, and incidentally, and I'm guilty of something that I've pointed out occasionally with commentaries, whenever I look at commentaries for this, the Parsha, this time of year, I'm always looking for, especially you see this in the Kli Yakar and you see in some others, that you realize they're working on their Shabbos Tshuva Drasha, and there is something over here very Rosh Hashanah, you know, thematically connected in the sense that that we choose God as king, and the fact that we're involved in the coronation. I mean, God is king of the whole universe. You know, there is a very famous gra, and I'm not convinced he's the first one who said it. It's based on the verse Ki Hashem Lamucha Umoshel Bagoyim. God is the king, but he's the ruler for the nations. So the gra said, what's the difference between ruler versus king, or king versus ruler? A king is coronated. A king is accepted. A ruler, he's ruling. I mean, you have no choice about it. Ki la Hashem Hamlucha Umoshel Bagoyim. Where do you see it in the text of the Chumash, the two sides? By Yosef and his brothers, what do they say to him? Hatim amaloch timloch banu? Are you going to be our king? And what's the next line that they say? Hamoshol timshol banu? Are you going to rule over us? Which means there's two stages to it. You think we're going to coronate you as king? Not happening. You think that you one day you're going to rule over us? It's absurd. That's not happening. Well, by the way, which one happened? Hamaloch or Hoya Moshel? What was Yosef? By the way, that's the tragedy. I think Yosef wanted to be Melech, but he never became Melech. He became Moshel. There was not one of that they were very happy about this whole situation. But Rosh Hashanah comes around, and God is ruler of the universe, whether we like this or not, whether we go to shul in Rosh Hashanah or not, whether we blow the shofar or not. But what happens when we do blow the shofar? We coronate God as king of the universe. So we make God king. So therefore, now go back to your point that you want to say. So when we get to coronate God, so what does that do to us? That elevates us as well. Now, notice, by the way, everything till now was just to get to this Gemara. The whole thing today was to get to this, to really get to one source. Look at source 14. And by the way, my point in terms of the methodology was, be careful when you read Aramaic sources back into Hebrew, because whoever translated back into Hebrew completely misunderstood it. I've seen worse when they get translated into English, but he completely missed what's going on, because what the Targum Yonatan or Sudi Yonatan was really doing is that he knew this Gemara that we're about to read, and the Gemara is one of the most striking Gemaras. When I say striking in terms of anthropomorphism, we know what this is. Giving God human qualities. And there's an element, but that's not what it all means. So let's read the Gemara. Enough introduction. Source number 14. Amar Rabbi Abin Bar Ada, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Minayin Shakadosh Baruch Hu Maniach Tefillin. How do we know that God puts on tefillin? Now, you can imagine how this particular passage can become somewhat disturbing to some people. I mean, what do you mean that God puts on tefillin? I mean, how do you even, you know, create such an image? And that's what I want to warn about, thinking symbolically, that sometimes the right way to understand the pshat in the Torah, there are people watching this, somebody who considers himself to be a social media expert said, let people know that you appreciate it, that they're watching. I don't know why I should do this. Thanks, okay. Donations coming to 1-800. 3:00 a.m. But thinking symbolically is very important, because what happened over here is the Gemara, and Chazal do this very often, they're not looking at the verses in a literal sense like we do sometimes. They're looking at it in terms of its symbolic meaning, and they give symbols to understand the context. So I'm just saying that as an introduction, and now let's continue reading. So God wears tefillin. And you're saying to yourself, what are you talking about that God wears tefillin? Do you really want the punchlines? Do I need to explain this? Are you too disturbed, or I can read a little more? Yes, no, which one? What? Keep reading? Nachon? Right? Minayin Shekadosh Baruch Hu Maniach Tefillin. Shenemar Nishba Hashem Biyimino Uvizroa Uzo Ve'en Yimino Elo Torah. Shenemar Miyimino Eshtat Lamo. So God's, you know, hand and so on. Again, these are anthropomorphisms. Ve'en Uzo Elo Tefillin. So there's like a three-step drasha right there. Shenemar Hashem Oz Lamo Yitain. Uminayin shatfilin oz lahem liYisrael. Now we're up to like four or five steps already to get to this point. Dichtiv ve'u kol ame aretz ki shem Hashem nikra alecha v'yerumi mecha. That God's name is on you. So when I say that God's name is on you, what exactly did that? Are we supposed to take that literally or symbolically? So what does that mean, that God is on you? God's name is on you. So now just think for a second. When someone puts on tefillin, and I'm sorry that this is a very male-oriented description, that when women get to be like God by creating, we only get to put tefillin on, but you become we need to put tefillin. You get to be creators, which is a little different. I hope you all appreciate my apologetics. I'll have some more hopefully soon. But when we say that God's name is on us, yeah, when you wrap tefillin on you, God's name, when you put tefillin on, God's name is on you. So that's exactly what it is. Kishem Hashem Nikra Alecha. Yerumi Mimeka. Vitani Reblezer Hagodo Omer, Elu Tfilin Sheberosh, that people will see you and be in awe of you. So now, what this means is that the nations of the world are supposed to look at us and see what? I just want to really take this back to our Parsha, because it's our Parsha which is standing in the background of this teaching, even though we don't know it yet. When we forge this partnership or this relationship with God, and we exalted God and lifted God, and God lifted us, so what happens when God lifted us? So again, all kinds of very nice words are used, and some of them are, by the way, quite important for this. We became changed. God is upon us. So the symbol for this is tefillin, because then God's name is upon us. But I'm saying that God's name should be upon us whether we're wearing tefillin or not wearing tefillin. But it's saying, oh yeah, oh, they're going to see the tefillin, because, you know, sometimes we need to see these things in a more literal sense. They're going to see the tefillin and they'll be in awe of this. Because why? Because God's name is upon us. But continue, that's the tefillin shebarosh. Amalei Rabbi Nachman bar Yitzchak bar Bchiya bar Avin, hanei tefillin demari alma, the tefillin of the master of the universe, ma ktiv bahu, what does it say on it? That's a very good question. That one second, just pause for that. That's a very good question. So you know, like the people who have tattoos and they write mom, like does the mother write me? No, I'm being very serious about that. That what? Very serious. I did see one in Hebrew last week that said Ima, right? Yes, I did see this. Yes. But when it's saying, when I use this as an example, so what does God write on his tefillin? Does God write, I am one? Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That's me. So meaning, what does God say in his tefillin? So that became a very, very fair question. So, but the answer, I think, is more important than the question is. Amar lei, umi ka'amcha Yisrael, gai echad ba'aretz. And who's like my people Israel, one nation? Which means we say God is one, and God says Israel is one, which means going back to this relationship, this reciprocity, which I noticed over here in this parsha, that we elevate God, but God elevates us. This Gemara is recognizing that those verses are talking about tefillin. By the way, just in case you think I'm getting carried away, because how in the world do I connect this to our parasha? Continue. Umi mishtabeach kud shebrichu b'shevchayu d'Yisrael. And does God really elevate and praise Israel? In, yes. Dichtiv et Hashem hemarta hayom v'Hashem imrcha hayom. Which means this idea that God wears tefillin, we wear tefillin, God's tefillin, our tefillin, says Shema Yisrael, and their tefillin, and God's tefillin says Mika Amcha Yisrael. That's, they used our verses over here in order to understand this. Now, when you look back at the Targum, just to see what it missed, Yat Hashem Chatvatun Chativa Chada, God creates us as one. That's Ha'em Yurcha. God lifts us up. God says that we are one. Which means that whoever translated this into whoever was translating this into the Hebrew totally missed the reference that the Gemara was using over here. And how do I know that I got? Because it continues and it says in the Targum Yonatan, because the Hachin Ktiv, how do we elevate God? How do we lift up God? Because we say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elkeinu Hashem Echad, which is exactly the point. That's what our tefillin is, which means this idea of the tefillin, of God wearing tefillin and man wearing tefillin in this Gemara is used as a symbol. But I just want to take this one step further. It is still the idea of the crown, which means looking for a way of seeing God's crown, as it were. God's crown says in it, you know, it's like the rings, that whether they're supposed to or not by a wedding band, anila dodila dodili, right? It's talking about the relationship with the other. So now it's interesting that what does God's crown say? What does it say in God's, again, this coronation? What does it say in God's crown? Who's like my people Israel? That's an unbelievable statement. We say God is one, or Rav Soloveitchik likes to translate it as unique, it's not just a number. There's one God, not three gods, not seven. That the God is totally unique. God's response is, Am Yisrael is totally unique as well. And therefore, we say God is one, and God says Israel is one. That's what's taking place in these verses. So what's the symbolic understanding? The symbolic understanding is the tefillin. By the way, Rabbi Nachman had a very interesting intuition. And you don't have to go to Uman. By the way, everybody lives in Jerusalem can just go to Rehov HaUman. It's I've heard that Rehov HaUman on Rosh Hashanah is just as good. It's actually better than Uman, right? Rabbi Nachman understood that tefillin is makes Jews look like unicorns. The idea of a unicorn, by the way, which is also something of a symbol of total uniqueness. So therefore, the idea of this oneness, is this one thing directed towards God, is also this idea of the unicorn, which was his intuition on this. So if we continue, looking at right after quoted our verse in the Gemara, Amar Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYisrael, Atem Asituni Chativa Achad Ba'Olam, Vani Ase Etchem Chativa Achad Ba'Olam. Atem Asituni Chativa Achad Ba'Olam Dichtiv Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Achad, Vani Ase Etchem Chativa Achad Ba'Olam Dichtiv Umikam Chisrei Goy Achad Ba'aretz. That is this reciprocal relationship. You've elevated me, I've elevated you. In your tefillin you say the Shema Yisrael, and in my tefillin I say who was like Israel. That's exactly how the Gemara understood these verses over here. I think we're going to skip source 15, although maybe we'll just look at the second part of it. It's the Panim Yafot, who I mentioned last week as well, was the teacher of the Chatam Sofer, lived in Frankfurt. He makes reference to the tefillin over here. And he says in the third line, Shatidim tzadikim shemu lefneichem, Kadosh v'zel yitcha am kadosh, v'ulay lo yucholim l'kayem mitzvat tefillin b'midbar, ad shenemar lahem barvot morav parshat shema v'yom shemoa. So he's troubled by something which I really started with. He's troubled by, why have we waited so long to have this whole relationship over here? And of course, I'm going to go back to the symbol of it. The symbol of it becomes the tefillin. So he says, why now are the Jews first wearing tefillin? By the way, didn't say it. But he's understanding things exactly the way that I'm suggesting. Right now, so he says, because we didn't have tefillin until now. Why didn't we have tefillin until now? Because we didn't have Parshat Shema until Sefer Devarim. We didn't have Parshat V'yom Shemoa until Sefer Devarim. In a sense, that's a very technical answer. But I think that there needs to be a more substantive answer to this in terms of the substance. But by the way, tefillin was first mentioned all the way back in Perek Yud Gimel when we left Egypt. Totafot Beninecha was already mentioned in Perek Yud Gimel. I mean, right after we leave, there's already a reference over there. So what did those tefillin have? There's an interesting Rashbam over there. Were those tefillin empty at that point? We didn't have the Shema yet. We had it, Ein Mukta Mumucha. And you understand this question becomes a much more complicated question. Just continue a little bit more. The last line here in the Panim Yafot, V'cheinu b'mitzvat Hashem, simchato ke'ilu hayom nitztavu, v'zei ikar kavanat ha-tefillin. That putting on the tefillin should make a person feel as if God gave us the Torah on that very day. Now, I want to just pause for a second, because I did not explain the whole thing. What he's doing is he's referencing two verses before this, on this day, and Rashi said, oh, on this day God gave it, but every day we should look at it this day. So how do we experience it that on this day God gave us the Torah? So he's saying that's what we put on the tefillin on that day. But he added one more word in, which I think is interesting. V'cheinu b'mitzvat Hashem simchato. There needs to be joy involved in this as well. That means receiving the Torah should be something of joy, and that may very well be a key part of this issue. Look at source 17, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, et Hashem Emarta Yom Liyot, and so on. What's special about today? Kol Hadar B'chutz La'aretz Doma K'mi She'in Lo Eloka. Again, he threw Zionism into this. If you live outside of Israel, it's as if you really don't have a God. Skipping a little bit, et Hashem Emarta Hayom, B'knisatcha La'aretz Liyot Lecha Lelokim, Al derech omro, and he continues so on. Liot l'chay elokim v'yadu ki elokim u'midat hadin, afo piken yomor Hashem v'yavuchu. So I need to explain all of this right now. He's saying that the relationship with God changes when we enter into the land of Israel. That's what he's saying. I'm not going to go into all the sources about keeping mitzvot and chutz laaretz and so on, because things change in the land of Israel. Why they change, we're not completely clear yet. The last thing that he made reference to over here, in terms of the midat hadin and the midat rachamim, because it says, et Hashem he'ermarta, Hashem is yud kei vav kei, is midat rachamim, and liot l'cha l'lokim is midat hadin. So which is it? Is it midat hadin or midat rachamim? I will point out, and I've said this before, that when we put on the tefillin, we have the two straps that come down, one on the right side, one on the left side. One represents the rachamim, the other represents din. What's profound about it is that when you search in the back and you look in the back, you realize that they both come from the same thing. They both come from the same place. And therefore, the midat din or midat rachamim are two expressions of God's will, but not indicating that we have some kind of duality or different gods. It all comes from one place. And when Moshe had asked God, can I see your... So what does it say? So that's what we say in Anim Zmirot, Kesher Tfilin Hera Le'anav, that he showed the Kesher Tfilin to the modest one, to Moshe. The Moshe asked to understand God's secret. So what's the secret of God? The secret of God is that both the Din and the Rachamim coming from the same place, which is part of what exactly what we're said over here in this verse, and that's what the pun... He didn't say it about the Tfilin, but that's part of what he's hinting at. Okay. Source 18, and this will take us to 18, 19, 20, 21. We're going to start with a Mishnah. Even though it says Yerushalmi, this is the Mishnah as recorded in the Yerushalmi. Somebody sent me last week a story in one of the religious newspapers. Reb Chaim Kanevsky was reading a Mishnah in Yerushalmi, and he noticed it was different and said it has to be changed. And so he says, is this story true? I said, absolutely not. It can't be true. I said, there are so many differences between the Mishnah and the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, it's not possible Reb Chaim Kanevsky just noticed it his 40th time going through Shas, or 50th time. It's absolutely impossible. There are some differences, and it's mentioned. There are differences between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. Rav Herschel Schechter's father, Rav Melech Schechter, who was the head of the Beis Din of the RCA, he actually wrote his doctoral thesis on the difference between the Mishnah and the Bavli Yerushalmi. And since then, someone he gave me a copy of the work, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, the Mishnah and the Yerushalmi in Source 18, and the only reason we're reading the Mishnah and the Yerushalmi is because you want to read the next line in the Yerushalmi itself. Amar Rav Yeshua ben Karcha. By the way, there's an opinion in the Gemara that Yeshua ben Karcha is Rabbi Akiva's son. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, Lama Kadma Shema L'Vayarim Shemoa. Why do we say Shema L'Vayarim Shemoa? By the way, the fact that he may be Rabbi Kiva's son and talking about Shema makes it more interesting. Kidei She'Kabel Olav Malchut Shemayim Tchila. In order that a person be able to accept upon themselves the kingship of God first, Va'acha Kach Yikabel Olav Ol Mitzvot. And then you accept the mitzvah, which means the first parsha of Shema is about accepting God, and the second vayah is accepting the mitzvah. By the way, it's interesting, because where we started today, it's about accepting mitzvot and about accepting God and the relationship between them. And why do we have achik love o machut v'haya im shamoa l'vayomer shaviyam shamoa noag b'yom v'laila? The second parsha is both day and night. V'yomer inog el b'yom. So that is the Mishnah, the Gemara. Reb Chiya b'shem Reb Yochanan, ma tam amru adam lovesh tefillin v'karet shma u'mitpalel. For what reason do they correlate wearing tefillin and praying? Now, this is a very funny question from our perspective today. Today, people only wear tefillin, and those people are generally only men wear tefillin, and they only wear tefillin in the, not even when they pray. They only wear it when they pray in the morning. And there's very good reason to believe that many, if not most people, would wear tefillin all day in the olden times. I saw a commentary on this passage saying that if you're in a place that you can't wear your tefillin all day, so at least wear your tefillin shoyad all day. You can't wear the tefillin shorosh because you're going, okay, at least wear the tefillin shoyad. What's the matter? I mean, why not do, you know, that part of the mitzvah all day, right? If you can. But we today have an absolute correlation between tefillin and Shema, but it's asking over here, why is there any correlation at all in terms of its essence? Those are two separate mitzvot. One mitzvah is to say Shema, another mitzvah is to daven. One mitzvah is to wear tefillin, another one's to daven. One is to wear tefillin, another is to say Shema. Why are we linking these together? So that's what the Yerushalmi is addressing. Reb Chiya b'Shem Yochanan, Matam Amru Adam Lofesh Tefillin V'Korei Et Shema Umid Paleel Kedei She'Yekabel Olav Malchut Shemayim Tchila Mishalem. In order for his acceptance of God to be complete. Okay, so you know, we just now missed like something. What makes it complete? I'll tell you what makes it complete. What makes it complete is, going back to Stu's point before, and you want to know which direction does it go. This is going in the other direction than you wanted to. How so? It's that only because God coronates us, we are really able to coronate God. Which means it's not just reflexive. It's saying we need to wear our tefillin, to be wearing our crown, in order to be declaring God as King of the universe. Because then it's somebody with a crown declaring that this is the king. It's as if God is Melech Machayim Lachim, but God made us Melachim, or he made us Kohanim. Which means making God or declaring God as kingdom of the universe becomes so much more significant when we are people who are declared to be significant. So therefore we need to wear our crown in order then to coronate God. So therefore that's exactly what the Yerushalmi is saying over here. And I'm going to say this again. The Yerushalmi understands that other Gemara that I referenced before in terms of God wearing tefillin, but it's using all of this as a symbol, which means our significance becomes more when we're wearing our crown, because the Shem Hashem is upon us, and we then declare God, that becomes a whole different relationship. This is phrased in the Bavli a little differently. It's as if somehow you're bearing false witness if you're not wearing the shan. That's the Bavli's way of saying it. The Yerushalmi say, no, it's just not complete. Why is it not complete? So I think this goes back to the previous point. Rav Soloveitchik, in source 20, cites the Rambam in 21. So let's read 21 first. He over here is talking about the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. Umakdimim l'kor Kriyat Shema, b'bnei sheyeshba. Why do we say it first? So this was exactly the question of the Mishnah. So listen to what the Rambam says. B'nei sheyeshba yichud Hashem, v'ahavato, v'talmudo, shu'i ikar gadol shakol taloi bo. Isn't this an interesting switch between the singular and the plural? Why do we say Shema first? Because Shema contains Yichud Hashem. What is Yichud Hashem? Declaring God is one, unique. One God. Shema Yisrael, Shema Kenu, Shema Chad. V'ahavato, v'ahavta t'Hashem Elokecha. V'talmudo, v'shinantam levanecha. Shehu ha'ikar ha'gadol. That is the Ikar. Look at all of them. Look back now, right. Look now at Rav Soloveitchik, where it's underlined in source 20. V'nir de Mesorah Torah, passing on the Torah, the Mesorah, Mahavikim to Kabbalat Omach Shemayim. That's accepting God as King of the universe. Okay, only a brisker. Teaching Torah is accepting God as the King of the universe. Dinei Amrinan Lakaman, Deparshat Shema Kodem, Leviyam Shemoah, Kadei Shekabal Omach Shemayim, Tchila, V'har Rambam Bi'er. Those are the elements which were in our parsha as well. It's again, go back and think what we saw. Moshe has completed teaching us the Torah. So what's the next stage? Now passing it on. That's this new job. That's this new job of this new generation. The references to v'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha that we saw along the lines over here, we understand why they connected it to Shema. This elevation of God and accepting God as one, that's what we found over here. So now I still want to answer one last question, and that is, why did it wait till this particular juncture? So that is connected to source 22. V'chem d'hachinami alma amar rabbi abba barzav d'amar rav. An avel, what's an avel? A mourner. Chayev b'kol ha-mitzvot ha-amarot b'torah. When somebody's mourning, they're obligated to keep all of the mitzvot. Chutz min ha-tfilin. Except for tefillin. Why can't they wear tefillin? Sherei ne'amar b'hen pa'er. Because tefillin are described as something of splendor or glory. Sh'ne'amar pe'ercha chavush alecha. Over there, that's a reference to Yechezkel, when he's told not to mourn, not to take off the glory, but normally what a mourner needs to do is to not to put on tefillin. Look at Rashi, source 23. Elo Amar Rabbi Abba, Kamo Lama Amar Afo Pi Shetarud Bitzaro Chayv B'Kol HaMitzvot Chutz Men HaTefillin Shenem Ayam Pe'er Li Yecheskel. Skipping. You know, this is glory. Kevan Debo'u Pe'er Va'avel Mitgolel Bitzaro Ba'afar. And the mourner is rolling about in the dust. Ein ze pe'er. Somebody who's so low down cannot wear something which is connected to glory or splendor. Look at the way that Rashi says the same idea in source 25. Shenemba ben pe'er, va'avil me'olel ba'afar karno v'rosho, ve'ein ze pe'er l'tfilin. That the mourner has the... On their heads they have the ashes, as it were, and that person cannot possibly have tefillin. Look at the way that Rashi is quoted by Tosfot in source 26. Perish Rashi, va'avum olal ba'afar karno ve'ina l'teit pe'er tachat afar, which is clearly the same letters over here, and he switched the afar to the efer. In the other sources it was efer, and here it's afar, which means with a person who's mourning and they're... I think that may be quite significant in terms of why this comes up now. But I do want to just point out one thing, and then I'll explain. Go back to our first source and look at Pasuk Yud Tet again. Ulatitnacha Elyon, to place you on top, al kol gayim and all the nations, asher asal letihila ulashem ule tiferet. What is tiferet? Tiferet is pe'er. Pe'er is a catchword, as far as Chazal is concerned, for tefillin. So if you're wondering how in the world Chazal saw tefillin of God or of man in this particular section, so the answer was, it was twofolded. One was the reciprocity between God and man, and God wears tefillin, man wears tefillin, but the other was the fact that the word tiferet is used over here. Tiferet is connected to tefillin. But what did we say about tefillin? That a mourner can't wear tefillin. So apparently, and here's where we get into our total Zionist mode. Apparently, when we first left Egypt, we were still rolling on the ground a bit, using Rashi's phraseology. We weren't elevated enough. At which point do we become elevated people? When we become a free people. So what does a free people mean? So you say, okay, free... So one person will tell me, oh, free people means they left Egypt, because they're no longer slaves. Someone else who's very firm will tell me, Ein bin charen elo mi she'asak v'torah, they became free when they stood at Har Sinai. But there's another element to freedom. You know what that last element of freedom is? Living in your own land. Living in your own land is an absolute expression of freedom. And therefore now, when we talked about the mitzvah of Bikurim, we're already placed in the land. We're thinking about in the past. We have to go and tell our kids what it was like when we used to be slaves in Egypt. That's part of the whole Bikurim Arami Avad Avdi. Now that we're free and we're in our land, now we have more glory. Now we have pe'er. Now we have splendor. Now we're a free people. Now we can elect God as free people. By the way, not the same as a nation who, you know, were this damsel in distress and God carried us out, you know, the knight in shining armor, and we basically had no choice. Or not as the people even that stood at Har Sinai, where God lifts up the mountain upon us and threatens us. Now we're about to enter into the land, and the accepting of God in the land of Israel as free people, electing God or coronating God, at this point it becomes something completely different, because now we're dignified, now we're standing up, now we're free. Now we can speak about us wearing our tefillin, our crowns. As I said before, if you want more apologetics, you can say that the women who never stood, the men who sinned at Har Sinai, what did it say that they lost? They lost their crowns. So if you want to say, because what did they sin? They sinned with the golden calf, their crowns will take it away. Whether the women lost their crowns or sinned or not, by the way, it's very simple. I can say the women never lost those kinds of spiritual crowns. They never lost those spiritual crowns. They never needed to be replaced by tefillin. Anybody who lost the spiritual crowns needed the tefillin. Anybody who didn't lose them did not need the tefillin. So as I said, that's my apologetics, if you like. But the point over here is that by Arvot Moav, we have a new relationship with God. We are standing on our feet, and we're that much more dignified at this point. If we're dignified, now we can have a different type of relationship. So from a dignified perspective, we coronate God, and God turns around and coronates us. And how this relationship works, well, the answer becomes that much more interesting. But I'm going to say it again. The way that Chazal are expressing it, oh, God is wearing tefillin and man is wearing tefillin. Correct. Absolutely. And therefore, what we have over here, in a sense, is the fulfillment of what was all mentioned back in Perek Yud-Tet. Perek Yud-Tet, where Am Yisrael are selected as Kohanim, a Kohen is to serve. That's what my father said, a Kohen is to serve. That means we're given a job. That means we're given a job now to teach into other nations, to become teachers, to pay, take this Masorah and to pass it on. Declaring God as King of the universe means declaring there's one God, loving that one God, and teaching about that one God. What's unbelievable about what we study today, and it's again based on the Psukim, is that God does the exact same thing about Am Yisrael, that God declares us to be this one nation. And maybe going into Rosh Hashanah, that should give us a lot more confidence.